The Gary Knowles Show. And now, your host, Gary Knowles. I still remember
when you used to be. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knowles. Today, a special, original, in-depth investigative report, How the Corruption of Science Leads to the Collapse of Modern Civilization. Richard Gale and myself have authored this. We have posted it on PRN.fm. I suggest that you read it and share it with as many people as possible, with your physicians. People in the health field in particular will find this of importance. Also, the latest on health and healing, including how lifestyle habits increase breast cancer risk, from the Medical University of South Carolina. Also today, time permitting, a point of view from Tucker Carlson. We can agree in or disagree in part or whole, but at least he had the courage to make some statements that I think we need to hear. In fact, while this piece is playing, I intend to stop it to highlight why certain things are important. Now, I disagree with Carlton on a lot of issues, but he's not afraid to deal with issues. And unfortunately, so many people are excluding topics altogether and guests. You don't see Cornel West and Chris Hedges. You certainly don't see Nellie Bailey and Bruce Dixon and the Black Agenda Report people anywhere. So we have all these wonderful voices that don't get a forum, and hence we don't get the benefit of their knowledge. We will today. Also, I'll be taking some of the messages that you've called in, our voicemail, and we'll be hearing from three or four of you. And that number to call and ask your question or make a statement is 862-800-6805. Again, if you'd like to call anytime 24/7, 862-800-6805. A lot of people right now are listening to this program live over a listening device, a telephone, a cell phone, a laptop. You can also, and also they're hearing it on YouTube, Gary Knowles' YouTube channel. And that number to call listen live is 641-793-7091, 641-793-7091. Let's begin. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. When nutrients and sugars and fats are broken down by the body, we have a process called advanced glycation, that's G-L-Y-C-A-T-I-O-N, glycation, end products are formed. And when one consumes processed foods that are high in sugar and fat, these increase. And certain cooking techniques like grilling, searing, frying, certainly defrying, increase these glycation, advanced glycation products. Those cause the cells to become inflamed. Those cause disease. Those speed up the aging process. They literally cause you to die earlier. And so poor diet and lack of exercise are associated with cancer development. But the underlying biology is not always well known. But the advanced glycation end products could offer biological link that explains how certain lifestyle habits increase cancer risk or lessen the likelihood that an anti-cancer therapy will be effective. So I want to focus for just a moment on this, because if there's one message today is we don't have to age and have diseases we think are normal to aging, which there are not, like dementia, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's, and loss of muscle mass. None of those are normal. Those are all due to the choices we made earlier in life that accumulated till one day we wake up and we forget. And we have high blood pressure. That grilling, that searing, that deep frying, the french fries, the pizzas, the barbecued ribs, the things that you are indoctrinated every single day from television. Now, if we had a completely ethical corporate interest, they would say, wouldn't it be better if we only allowed products on the air that encouraged health instead of promote disease, but it's just the opposite. With rare exception, like maybe apple cider or orange juice, almost everything else is promoting disease because it promotes this whole process of having nutrients, fats and proteins and sugars in the body break down and create advanced glycation end products. Now, as these accumulate in your organs, they cause damage that is associated with diseases like diabetes and cardiovascular disease and arthritis. However, we can reverse that. And they also really promote cancer growth. And that's true for breast cancer and prostate cancer. This is inflammation, and this is part of what these advanced products do. So simply changing your diet to a healthy, plant-based diet with lots of fresh fruits and vegetables and pulses and legumes and grains, nuts and seeds, you're not going to have these. You're not going to have the inflammation. You're going to be anti-inflammatory, and you're going to prevent these diseases. This was just published in the Journal of Breast Cancer Research and Treatment. Columbia University, new study. 8,000 middle-aged and older individuals found that physical activity, I'm talking about any kind of physical activity or any amount, cuts the health risks from sitting. And that's important because we sit too much. We need physical activity. So any intensity or duration cuts the risk of early death by as much as 35%. Do you remember in those old movies you would see like accountants sitting at their desks all day? Almost every shot was of someone sitting. And that became the norm. Go to your office and sit. But you've just slept all night. Well, that's what we were conditioned to do. So according to this article published in the American Journal of Epidemiology, the more we sit, the shorter our lifespan. The more active we are, the less time we take off our life. Quote, our findings underscore an important public health message that physical activity of any intensity provides health benefits. That's according to Dr. Keith Diaz, assistant professor of behavioral medicine at Columbia University. And by the way, 1 in 4 adults spends more than 8 hours a day sitting. And this is not the first study to show this. So you should never sit for more than 2 hours at a time. Stand up, do deep knee bends, half squats, you know, move your legs, move your body. From Washington University School of Medicine, poverty is linked to childhood depression and changes in brain connectivity. What does this mean? It means that many negative consequences are linked to growing up poor. And researchers at the university, that's in St. Louis, have identified one more: altered brain connectivity. So they analyzed the brain scans of over 105 children, ages 7 to 12, and the research has found that key structures in the brain are connected differently in poor children than in kids raised in more affluent settings. In particular, a part of the brain called the hippocampus, H-I-P-P-O, hippocampus, C-A-M-P-U-S. That's the structure key to learning, memory, regulation of stress, and the amygdala. And the amygdala, which is linked to stress and emotion, connect other parts of the brain differently in poor children than in kids whose families had higher incomes. Now, those connections, viewed using functional MRI scans, were weaker depending upon the degree of poverty to which a child was exposed. Hence, the poorer the family, the more likely the hippocampus and the amygdala would connect to other brain structures in ways the researchers characterize as weaker. In addition, poor preschoolers were much more likely to have symptoms of clinical depression when they reached school age. I think this is a very important study because now it shows that those families raised under poor conditions, and the current federal poverty level is $24,250 a year for a family of four. That's really tough to survive. And children raised in poverty tend to have poor cognitive and educational outcomes and are at higher risk of psychiatric illnesses. They're more likely to have depression and antisocial behaviors. And so researchers have always hypothesized that the factors such as stress and adverse environmental exposures, including lead and cigarette smoke and poor nutrition, were the primary factors. Ah, now we have something brand new to think about. When you're raised poor as a child, your physical brain is different. So it's not all social and it's not all psychological. It's physiological. It's biochemical. It's bioelectric because every one of those neurons are flashing. Every one of the synaptic centers are encoding. Every one of the dendrites are transmitting. So here is a question. If our amygdala, if our hippocampus is adversely affected as a child, what is to say that it's not also adversely affected as an adult, as a senior citizen? We have more senior citizens committing suicide today than ever before in our history. We also have more adults in middle age committing suicide after they have gone through loss, mainly loss of a career or income, and no longer can supply their family with a standard of living they had grown up with. They feel helpless, they feel overwhelmed, and they're not getting help from big government or big corporations who were part of the problem. So just think the next time we put all of our energy into the wall and no energy, zero, into all of our children who are living in poverty, and all the adults living in poverty, and senior citizens eating cat food because it's cheaper than tuna in a can. And I've met and interviewed and filmed those people. They're in my new film, Brother Can You Spell or Dime, which will be out next fall. So I'm on the road. I'm seeing this phenomena. And yet we think it's only psychological. It's only sociological. It's not. We now have hard, absolute scientific proof you can change the structure and functioning of the brain when you put a person into a position of poverty. So how many people right now are in poverty in the United States? Abject poverty, over 100 million. How many people are actually earning $2 a day? Over 3 million. How many children go to bed hungry each night, they're food insecure? Almost 17 million. How many children leave school each day and don't have a home to go to, have to live in a car or a van or a shelter? Almost 3 million. So wouldn't you think that maybe helping our friends in our society would also be a priority? Certainly equal to a wall? Evidently not, and that's unfortunate. University of Florence, which is in Italy, raw olive oil boosts your brain function. This is good news. Very few olive oils in the world are actually raw. The reason being it relates to processing and oil extraction. You've heard me mention phenolic. Phenolic, F-E-N-O-L-I-C. These are compounds in olive oil, and they're the highest grade when they come from sources which use minimal refining and heating. And many of these compounds beneficially affect gene expression linked to brain function, and scientists from the Department of Neuroscience and at the University of Florence report that extra virgin olive oil rich in polyphenols are associated with, quote, strong improvements in coordination, memory, and anxiety-related behavior in this laboratory experiment. So, the sources with the highest polyphenols would be ice-pressed olive oil. That's right, you probably have never heard this before. ICE, pressed olive oil. They're manufactured by simply pressing the fruit, because olives are fruits, without refining, no heating, no extracting, no use of chemicals or other process, just cold, meaning no heat added, pressing of the olives. And every other olive oil involves a refining process using high heat and chemicals to extract the oil. But that's why when you look at a label, it must state extra virgin olive oil, because it's unique, because you're essentially eating a component of the raw olive. And this is the secret of its enormous health benefits. And the polyphenols were found to change the expression of the microRNA. That's a small non-coding RNA molecule that plays a role in gene expression and produce profiles similar to those observed in younger beings. And this was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. And finally for today, vitamin D supplementation, I'm suggesting 3,000 to 5,000 units a day, could help reduce COPD exacerbations. This is from Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom. And it was reported in Thorax, the peer-reviewed journal. And COPD is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. And by taking vitamin D, you can end up reducing your death and suffering. Nearly all deaths of COPD, which includes emphysema and chronic bronchitis, are caused by disease exacerbations, which frequently occur in association with upper respiratory infections. So they took 100,000 units of vitamin D per month, and they found a tremendous reduction, 45% reduction in COPD having those symptoms. So that's good news. We are 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back into your questions. Please stay with us.
Thanks for the times that you've given me. The memories are all in my mind. And now that we've come to the end of our rainbow, there's something I must say out loud.
Discussion today concerning Wikipedia, and something came to mind. I will make an analogy here between the fall of Rome and us. After the fall of Rome, the writings of the empire and Greece were copied and guarded in the monasteries of Europe until they could be disseminated during the Renaissance, many hundreds of years later. We are headed towards a similar fall of empire, and we will need some sort of documentation of history if you or the internet are taken down. So, here's the idea. Put out DVDs on Benghazi, Wikipedia, vaccines, Hillary, Syria, white helmets, AIDS, geoengineering, etc. Sell them for $3 or $5 a piece. For example, I can take 20 of them and leave them in doctor's offices, or flip them into the New York Times, 20 copies or so that are sitting around in Starbucks. All of this being done, one, to educate an uninformed public, and two, if Wikipedia has the last word on the internet, there might be an alternative undercurrent that can survive until the next Renaissance. Gary, thank you for all your good work.
That's an interesting set of questions of doing specific topics like the white helmets. It was Clarence Darrow who said, "I do not pretend to know what ignorant men are sure of." And therefore, I would agree with this gentleman that we need a repository of information that shows the truth, but I would do it a little differently. I don't think taking tapes into doctor's offices are going to get you anything but booted out of the office. And just selecting a few of the hot-button topics right now does not tell the full story for anyone. Instead, how I would lay this out to make it more practical is first, I would take 100 of the most important topics facing us now and will face people in the future, like global warming, for example, and the number of people that can be healthily sustained on the planet, growing food for them. That would also require talking about the best ways to plant foods and which foods to plant and how to go to a vegan diet to save the environment. So all that involving the saving of the planet and hence saving the human species, that would be one program, and from that a subset of programs from that one program. So that's the environment. Then on the body politic, and to discuss that, you would have to have scholars on and do a series of discussions where you talk about what is the intent of a democracy, because we were never meant to be a democracy. We were meant to be a republic. In fact, that's what we were founded as a republic, not a democracy. Now, there's nothing wrong with a democracy, but we just don't have one. We have an oligarchy today. So you would have to have a discussion of what we ideally wanted and what it morphed into and who was responsible and how this was done and how our elections were co-opted and Citizens United and how money took over the process of selecting the candidates to make the choices for us, both domestically and in foreign affairs. That's separate, understanding body politics. Understanding the role of, let's say, how we became a police state, how we became a totalitarian state, how we lost our freedoms and did nothing about it. And then you take every one of the freedoms we have lost and you go through it. You bring in someone like John Whitehead, one of the best constitutional scholars in the world, and he and Danny Schechter and some others would then talk about, here's what we were guaranteed under the Constitution. Now, here's what we have, or here's what we've lost, and here's how it happened. Under Obama, he took a samurai sword to the Constitution, our Bill of Rights. He was one who enacted a police state. Every single whistleblower who had the courage and the spiritual awareness and the character to come forward and say, I work in this agency, and here are the crimes against humanity and American citizens that this agency has been systematically engaged in for a long time as a part of official policy. And for reporting the truth about crimes, he was convicted of crimes for reporting on crimes. Now, think about that for just a moment. So the person who tells us what's wrong and who's doing what's wrong and what's criminal and who's doing criminal activity, none of those people are ever arrested. None of them are ever sent to jail. A man gets up before Clapper. What a fool gets up in front of Congress and lies. He should go to jail for that. And yet he doesn't. And the agency overseas isn't reprimanded, isn't deconstructed. The FBI is a criminal organization in its entirety. And it should be completely replaced. Every single thing about it should be replaced. It's been politicized. And by politicizing, you have weaponized it. Right now in the United States, there is a coup. Now, the left won't acknowledge because they're part of it. And the right's too dumb to figure it out. They can't do anything right. But we have a coup. Hate the president all you want. That's completely legitimate. He is the worst of the worst. But in the process, you've let everything else that's important fall by the wayside, and you've tried to get him out of office. Now, he'll destroy himself. I've said that repeatedly. He's incapable of making any right choice, even by accident. But instead, they engineered a coup to get him out. That's a crime against humanity. That's high crimes and treason. That. But no, the person that exposes the crime is the one who goes to jail. And more people were punished under Obama than all other presidents preceding it. So that's how cost-cuff we have become. So you have to have people who are expert on it, nonpartisans, giving us their honored and scholarly views of how did we get to become a police state? How did we get to where police officers are able to steal your car, take the money out of your bank accounts, take the money you have in your possession, steal your business through asset forfeiture, stealing more money than all of organized crime in a given year in the United States, where the police become the biggest criminals. And not one police is held accountable, not one of the, you know, the supporting prosecutors and district attorneys, state's attorneys, U.S. attorneys, and attorney generals. They're all complicit. They're all corrupt to the bone. You have to tell that story. In medicine, you have to go through the military-industrial complex and how we became a militarized, pro-war, need war, fight every day, spend all of our money to the people who tell us how afraid we should be, as if we're just incapable of making reasoned choices. You have to tell that story by people who are expert in it. You bring in Max Blumenthal. You bring in the people who, Glenn Greenwald, who can tell you the truth, and you tell that story. So once you tell the 100 top stories of the 21st century, that allows people who are not aware of it to learn, and allows those of us who are aware of it but have not yet been called to action to organize and to try to change it. So in that respect, I agree with you. Let's go to the next one, please.
Hi, it's Bob from Brooklyn. Ronald Reagan continues to be a right-wing icon, and Democrats praise him compared to Bush and Trump. But in his early 50s, Reagan would tell stories that he was a war hero in World War II. He never left Los Angeles. The man was insane. He had delusions of grandeur. We need a complete reexamination of him as a person. Thank you.
I do not believe that Ronald Reagan was insane. I just believe that he was a very cunning opportunist. He was not bright, but he was clever. He surrounded himself with people who are a lot brighter to facilitate what was necessary for a neocon agenda. Probably more convictions among Reagan administration in U.S. history than any other presidency. 138, I think, total, including James Watt, 21 felonies there, Assistant Secretary of State Elliot Abrams, Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger on Iran-Contra, and there were many were caught on lying and obstruction to Congress. Some were pardoned. Then you had the October surprise, where they could have gotten the hostages out of Iran, but they held off until after the election so Jimmy Carter would lose and there would be a win. There's increasing Brzezinski's funding of the Mujahideen, the terrorists in Afghanistan. He helped create Al-Qaeda, more than Carter's team. Iran-Contra was under Reagan, supplying arms and support to Saddam Hussein, especially in Iraq's offensive against Iran. And who was the person who met with Saddam Hussein? Who was our Secretary of Defense? I'm sure you know the name. That was under Ronald Reagan. And then ignoring Iraq's war crimes. For example, Iraq was using chemicals received from Great Britain and the United States. I'm the one who broke that story, by the way. I got the invoice, I got the bills of lading, how they were transporting through the CDC chemicals, and then he was reusing the chemicals against the Kurds and against the Iranians. That was a crime against humanity. We supported that. And also illegally supplying weapons to Nicaragua's right-wing death squads. And we funded right-wing militias in Central America against populist socialist movements. And that was Reagan and the people around him, including Bush Sr. And we started, what else did we do? We funded all the different squads that would go in and attack Grenada, which housed some small number of Cuban soldiers. And that was simply to divert attention away from his failure to deal with the bombing of over 240 Marines in Beirut. And we supported his racial apartheid association with South Africa. We, the United States, supported apartheid by supporting South Africa. We did not condemn it, and we did not refuse to trade with them because of it. We supported dictators like Manuel Noriega in Panama and Fernando Marcos in the Philippines. That was Ronald Reagan. There was a savings loan crisis where over 700, I think around 750 firms failed and cost $100+ billion. And that could have been prevented. We grant rigging of favored Republicans through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, going to lobbyists. That was Reagan. And widespread EPA scandals. Multiple senior EPA officials removed in the first 3 years. We did not clean up the Superfund sites. He gave benefits to the private corporate polluters. Remember Operation Three Wind, where the FBI investigation started back in the mid-1980s into United States government corruption of military officials and private defense contractors? And then you had WebTech scandal, where bribery of the defense contractors. And I believe the Attorney General was Edward Meese, forced to resign over it, as well as convictions of Reagan's press secretary, Lynn Nofzinger, later overturned. And you had Datagate, Reagan's access to Carter's prep documents via Wim Casey, who became his head of the CIA. And also he set a record budget deficits exceeding $200 billion. Carter's was $50 billion. And he tripled the national debt in 8 years. And peak unemployment at almost 11%. And it was in his administration that farmers were going bankrupt because their interest on their loans was up to 22%. One-third of all farms in America were foreclosed on. He could have stopped all that. And it was also Ronald Reagan who robbed Social Security, the trust fund, to pay for the budget shortfalls by hundreds of billions of dollars. He also ignored the AIDS epidemic. So those are just some of the things that I would challenge Reagan for, and in on no level and no way was he a hero. Yet he has been made a hero. His whole real reputation has been whitewashed and sanitized, and that's unfortunate. I'm looking at the time, and I've got to take a break and come back. We will continue with those tomorrow, but I have to deal with a very important, in-depth, original investigative report on the corruption of science. We're going to do that in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you if you're just joining us. I'm Gary Nall. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you an original, in-depth investigative report. It is very important reading and more essential that we understand its significance. It is entitled How the Corruption of Science Leads to the Collapse of Modern Civilization with Richard Gale and myself. This new year will likely mark another milestone in science and medicine. Again, Americans will spend more money on diagnostic tests, surgeries, and other medical procedures, and patients will consume more drugs and receive more treatments than any other time in U.S. history. We will continue to be inundated with television drug advertisements with the reassuring message, you don't have to fight this battle alone, we're with you. There will be images of laboratories and medical research and happy patients to strengthen viewers' faith that the medical science is progressing and working on behalf of everyone. will be promised that new cures for life-threatening diseases are on the horizon. The United States will also spend a minimum of $3.5 trillion on health care, in addition to a $1.5 trillion loss in work and wages due to illness. $5 trillion in total, approximately 18% of the gross domestic product, and tens of millions more dollars will be spent to advertise Big Pharma's messages. And herein lies the fundamental problem. There are more doctors, more hospitals, more pharmaceutical drugs and medical procedures than ever before. And yet, we have not conquered nor made any significant progress in curing any major disease. Instead of making efforts to fund disease prevention and educate the public, prevention has been abandoned altogether. There are volumes of excellent peer-reviewed studies documenting research and clinical experience showing a healthy diet, physical exercise, and stress management regimens can either completely prevent or be incorporated into medical treatment protocols successfully. However, there is no profit to be made in prevention. Modern medicine is solely devoted to disease management. So how do we reach this threshold where trillions of dollars have been used and nothing gained, as if you just threw it into the abyss? One reason is that few voices have been able to reach the public to address the widespread corruption in corporate science, especially medicine, agriculture, and environmental issues. Honest, independent science is ignored in favor of proprietary pharmaceutical drugs and genetically modified foods. Fraudulent research has been used to justify nuclear power as a clean, green energy. Political officials working on behalf of fossil fuel interests convince us with junk science that hydrofracking poses no health risks and is environmentally friendly. A single big pharma corporation with thousands of employees and billions of dollars in sales and profits is deeply connected to investors and public relations firms and health federal agency officials and the media. All of these externally invested parties are in turn dependent upon the corporation's revenue stream. Money that trickles down is spent bribing medical schools to push the conventional drug agenda's regime, or funneled to front groups and foundations to buy off so-called experts to debunk critics. Revenues received by the mainstream media networks for drug advertisements are payoffs assuring that no reporting appears that might show the company and its medical products to be in a bad public light. The benefit Big Pharma receives from hijacking the federal regulatory and legislators is protection from the nation's judiciary so that when a drug like Merck's anti-arthritic Vioxx conservatively kills over 60,000 patients and injures at least another 130,000, that there is no immediate FDA recall and deaths are permitted until the crisis reaches a tipping point and health officials are forced to step in. Never is a drug executive prosecuted. Vioxx sales from Merck were $18 billion, and they only had to pay a little over $5 billion in a settlement. Everyone who knew Vioxx was a defective product had engaged in malicious afterthought or forethought, and there was no deleterious consequences to any of these people who engaged in the cover-up. The company merely paid a fine and returned to business as usual, and the media simply whitewashed the seriousness of Merck's crimes. Science creates artificial intelligence and geoengineering and G5 wireless technology. These are held up as great achievements. We're never hearing anything about their downside from mainstream media, and private corporations will not disclose evidence of their risks and dangers. If a scientific invention appears in the peer-reviewed literature, it has already reached a gold standard. Any controversy has been settled. However, we are now finding that the entire peer-reviewed journal system is utterly corrupt. In fact, as we will recount, it is all a fraud, and it will worsen without any efforts made to reform it. Quite simply, there is neither concerted will nor ethical standard to improve the peer review system because it generates too much profit. Drugs are being pushed upon healthy people not because they treat a disease, but because they are told they will prevent a disease, such as the case with the new HIV prevention drugs such as Truvada and PrEP and statins. There is no definitive science that these drugs are effective enough for anyone to take them. Imagine being healthy and told that starting chemotherapy will prevent cancer. That would be insane. And now we discover that the world's largest open source site for medical information, Wikipedia, articles about medical products and their therapeutic regimens are penned by completely unqualified editors with no medical background and many who prefer to remain anonymous. Yet Wikipedia editors state with authority that there are no proven health benefits from non-conventional and natural medical therapies. After reading any Wikipedia entry about chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathy, Chinese medicine, naturopathy, or energy medicine, the reader will walk away believing it is all pseudoscience or fraud. However, collectively, there are hundreds of thousands of studies to support their therapies' efficacy and safety. Legitimate, yes, legitimate scientific inquiry has already been shown that they work. Independent board-certified physicians have been using complementary and alternative medicine for a long time with excellent results. But you won't find it in any of these qualified physicians being invited to lead a committee at the FDA, the CDC, or any other national health agency or department. Nor do we find special reports about successful advances in natural health regimens appearing in Dateline, 60 Minutes, CNN, nor the New York Times or Washington Post. So where exactly is the cesspool of modern medicine, food science, and agrochemical industry? Are we to find the truth? No one in the scientific and federal health agencies can be trusted anymore. They are all compromised. No mainstream journalist is trustworthy, and no one can be certain whether a paper appearing in a peer-reviewed scientific journal is reliable. Even the clinical physicians on the front lines of the healthcare work in the dark. It is only after large numbers of deaths and injuries, such as with Agent Orange, DDT, aspartame, mammography, etc., that a light goes on. And even then, only for a short time before returning to the dark. Our research shows that the majority of pharmaceutical corporations have settled lawsuits, some of which are described in this article. At the same time, our analysis confirms that over 900,000 Americans die annually from iatrogenic causes. How is it that the pharmaceutical industry and medical establishment has killed more Americans than those who died in Vietnam without any serious consequences? Now wrap your mind around this. If we take a conservative figure of preventable deaths from medicine, let's say 500,000 per year, during the last four decades, that would account for approximately 20 million Americans dying who did not have to. That is more than all of those killed in wars throughout American history. The reason American medicine has turned into the nation's largest and deadliest battlefield is that for scientific corruption to succeed with impunity, everything must be interconnected. The Surgeon General, the heads of federal health agencies, drug makers, the insurance industry, medical schools and professional associations, and the media operate as a single army waging a war on health against Americans. Corporate interests control everything. Modern medicine has morphed into a religious cult which cannot contemplate the potential of its own vulnerabilities, and numerous patients have been played for fools. As we will see, medicine profits from keeping patients sick. We understand that you may be confused about this message because it goes directly against everything the medical establishment tells us. The fact is that science is completely vulnerable to corruption, and this has always been the case. Private industry and government know this perfectly. The checks and balances separating private and public interests have collapsed. Today, a sincere person who blows the whistle on government and corporate malfeasance and crimes can find him or herself going to jail. The medical regime is now a single entity. All of its parts are consolidated and intertwined into a monolithic bemoaneth dedicated to protecting its bottom line. It is not time to say more. It is time to say enough. When we consider Marx's statement that history repeats itself first as a tragedy, then as a farce, it requires little effort to look back upon history and witness a long legacy of scientific horrors and tragedies. Yet today, matters are far worsened. Ever since the Rockefellers privatized American healthcare back in the 1930s, science in the hands of powerful private interest groups and corporate government agencies have spiraled downward to its current state, a sad and virulent burlesque spectacle. If medical corruption has been conducted with the results of vastly improved health to the nation, we might close our eyes. However, as corruption throughout the medical establishment and federal health agencies increases, so has the health of the nations substantially decreased. The monster the Carnegie Foundation unleashed in its Flexner report to set the standard for medical education back in 1910 has since opened its jaws wider to swallow the little integrity that might remain in American medicine. The nation's health statistics and annual rise in preventable diseases proves the case. The United States is the world's most medicated country and yet ranks at the bottom of the pack of developed nations for quality of health. It is also the only nation in the developed world with the average lifespan in decline. A Consumer Reports survey estimates that 55% of Americans regularly take a prescription drug, and among those, the average person takes four drugs. In 2016, over 4.5 billion prescriptions were filled, earning the pharmaceutical industry over $200 billion in profits. An earlier estimate, conducted and published by the Mayo Clinic, found that 70% of Americans are on at least one prescription drug, and over 50% are on two. 20% of patients are on five or more medications. Over 17% of citizens 45 years and older take antidepressants, including one in four women. A multi-year population-based survey conducted by the University of Illinois at Chicago found that 32% of adults diagnosed with depression were taking medications with depression listed as an adverse effect. These drugs include proton pump inhibitors, analgesics, beta blockers, and synthetic hormone contraceptives. For anyone who cares to take a broad, objective, panoramic view of the illnesses plaguing the American landscape, the situation will be found shocking. Clearly, it needn't be this way. Most people enter the sciences for the noble reason and because of a passion for discovery. So then why do they so often emerge out of the end of the institutional treadmill as proponents of products that do not help, but do more harm than good? Let us look now at the dismal state of modern science. There have been prophetic voices in the past who have warned about the dire direction in which modern scientific advancement is headed. In his 1924 essay about the future of science, the British mathematician and moral philosopher Bertrand Russell wrote, quote, "I am compelled to fear that science will be used to promote the power of dominant groups rather than to make men happy. We have been taught to fly in our efforts, but that has not worked. I fear that the same fate may overtake the populations whom modern men of science have taught to fly," end quote. Later in his essay, Russell continued, quote, whether in the end science will prove to have been a blessing or a curse to mankind, it is my mindset that I am doubtful, end quote. And by the way, Bertrand Russell was one of the brightest men in the history of philosophy. So for Russell, those who can sincerely call themselves scientists pursue their discipline out of a love for knowledge. Science is supposed to improve conditions necessary to foster our well-being and happiness and to preserve the planet's environment in an ethical manner. A scientist who truly pursues knowledge out of love, Russell argues, will desire the fruits of his work and craft to be expressions of kindness for the greater good. On the other hand, science is perverted when knowledge is pursued solely for power and domination over others. He warned about the trends of his day increasing, whereby the holders of scientific knowledge became, quote, evil, and science solely serves the ambitions, the powerful, and those who control scientific inventions, end quote. Russell said, scientific knowledge does not make men more sensible in their aims. Administrators in the future will be presumably no less stupid and no less prejudiced than they are at present. Since the days when science broke free from the religion during the European Renaissance, the blind faith in perpetual scientific progress as humanity's best of fortunes has persisted to the present day. In fact, in the 21st century, scientific materialism has largely replaced religious beliefs and morals altogether. This is especially evident in the contemporary regressive movements of skepticism, the new atheism, science and evidence-based medicine, genetic engineering, artificial intelligence, Randian objectivism, and scientific positivism, which have all been chained to corporate capital and scientific bureaucracies. This myth of perpetual scientific progress, says Russell, quote, is one of the comfortable 19th century delusions which our more disillusioned age must discard. In the end, Russell foresaw that science may be the ultimate cause behind the destruction of our civilization. From our own perspective, given our governments and corporations' utter disregard towards climate change, insensitive destruction of the natural world and other species, medical abuse of prescription drugs, and brushing off the lives of those in dire economic and social straits, we would agree. Throughout its history, the practice of medicine has been associated with humanitarianism and compassionate efforts to relieve the suffering of others. In modern times, we assume that medical science is serving us to find new miracles to save our lives. In ancient systems, medicine was perceived as a divine art and knowledge brought down to humans by the gods. A healer who lived by the ethical codes of his craft was held in high esteem by rulers and peasants alike. Although there have been always medical pretenders who took advantage of the ignorant, the medical arts themselves retained their integrity until our modern era. Before outlining the many ways that conventional corporate medicine has become the paradigm of a science turned enemy against its essential moral code and the people it is supposed to serve, we might begin with a recent example depicting just how low the medical discipline has sunk into Hades. The state of modern American medicine was accurately summarized in April 2018 when Goldman Sachs released its financial projection report entitled The Genome Revolution in Biotechnology Companies. The report also doesn't hesitate to state that clearly that for future investment, corporate profits far outweigh the curing of disease. Quote, clearly, that future investment, corporate profits far outweigh the curing of disease. Goldman Sachs is one of Wall Street's largest investors in high-growth technologies, particularly pharmaceuticals, medical devices, and healthcare services. The report presents the frightening question, is curing patients a sustainable business model? End quote. That's from Goldman Sachs. Even for the most hardened proponents of natural medicine, opponents of Big Pharma, there are times when a drug developer hits the nail on the head, such as the case with the Gilead Sciences drug Harvoni and Epclusa, which have achieved over a 90% cure rate for hepatitis C. This is an extraordinary cure rate. But for Goldman Sachs, this is a bad sign for investors and shareholders. The drug's success has steadily drained the pool of patients requiring treatment. At their peak in 2015, these drugs earned $12.5 billion. 3 years later, they were expected to earn under $4 billion, and revenues will continue to decline. Goldman writes, quote, Goldman Sachs, quote, in the case of infectious diseases such as hepatitis C, curing existing patients also decreases the number of carriers able to transmit the virus to new patients. Thus, the incident pool will decline. Where an incident pool remains stable, such as in cancer, the potential for a cure poses less risk to the sustainability of a franchise, end quote. Whoa. I'm going to leave it there for today. I'm only one-third through the article. I will continue on tomorrow's program with part two of a special in-depth investigative report. You can download the article and read it and share it as far as you can, because we need to know this. The article is entitled, How the Corruption of Science Leads to the Collapse of Modern Civilization. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.